Welcome to another episode of the Good Lion Podcast. I am your host, Brian Higgins.
And I am Aaron Salvato.
Your other host.
Is other host more demeaning than co-host? I wasn't trying to set you up to not have a title that was good, but I kind of ended up doing that to you.
You know what? I don't really care because, Brian, you're the host with the most, okay?
The most what?
The most hostiness. The most hostess pastries.
I own the most hostess snacks.
Do you have any ding dongs? Do you have any Twinkies? Do you have any Little Debbies? Was Little Debbie...
Little Debbie's its own company, I think.
Her own brand.
Oh. I only learned that like 6 days ago, though.
What?
I always thought they were like one big super company because I was like eight and I just wanted snacks. I didn't care.
What 6 days ago happened that made you learn about Little Debbie's?
So we were together with my family. Early November is family birthday month. My dad's birthday, my mom's birthday, and my wife's birthday all happen within an 11-day stretch.
Mm-hmm.
So we did one family hangout, and we were talking about favorite childhood snacks, and then hostess came up. And then I forget how exactly it ended up coming into the conversation, but somebody said like, oh, my school was a hostess school versus like a Little Debbie school. And it's kind of like when there were restaurants where it's like, I'll take a Coke. Oh, is Pepsi okay? And like that kind of divide. And I was like, wait a second, that was a divide that was made?
Oh yeah. Yeah, hostess versus Little Debbie. It rages about as hard as Calvinism versus Arminianism. So let's get into the episode. Brian, what are we talking about today, man?
Today we're talking about a big topic with a word that you've probably thrown around a lot in your church circle.
Mm.
But if you're honest, none of you really know what it means.
Ooh.
Today, we're talking about discipleship.
Discipleship. Bro, you getting discipled, bro?
You gonna get your 12 on?
That word just sends me back into youth pastor mode. Bro, time for some discipleship, bro. Let's go grab some burritos, bro, down by the harbor.
I think that's a very South California specific experience.
Brooklyn and I have talked about this. When I'm living out here in Oklahoma, I sound a lot different than I did in California. I feel like when I was a youth pastor, like this is how I talk to my adult friends. When I talk to young people in California, it was very much like, hey, bro, radical, dude. Burritos, Jesus. Like that was my youth pastor voice. If you're listening and you're a former student, you're like, that sounds like the Aaron I know and love. It was all a lie. I was faking it to sound more Californian than I actually was. Now you know the truth. Now you know.
Wow.
I mean, I didn't really fake my voice, but I mean, what's your youth pastor voice?
When you're embellished
around
it,
a bunch of middle school students, what do you sound like, Brian?
It's actually pretty much like this. The only difference is in teaching, I talked faster.
Yeah.
Because honestly, what started happening was I started realizing that all of my kids are used to watching YouTube videos, and YouTube videos are all about speaking fast and quick cuts.
Can you do a YouTuber voice right now?
I'm just like afraid I'm going to get it wrong.
No, dude, I want to. Come on.
I feel like this
I'm always doing the voices.
I feel like this is the moment where like you faked in front of your friends that you saw the movie and then they were like, do the quotes. And you're like, I don't know.
Apparently, Brian has never actually watched a YouTube video. I think we should move on to some questions about discipleship. How does that sound?
Yes. This is what we're actually doing today. What we really want to do is take a word that gets used a lot in church circles and that in church circles, people kind of recognize this is an important thing.
Yep.
This thing matters. We care about discipleship. I've never heard church circles bring up the word discipleship to finish the sentence with doesn't matter. Like it's always been discipleship is really important.
Yep.
You need discipleship. And we don't often know what that means. So that's what we want to dive into today.
Yeah, I work for Calvary Global Network, and our mission statement is something like CGN, planting churches, proclaiming the gospel, making disciples. Like that's in every church's mission statement, something about disciples and disciples.
There were six words and one of them was disciples.
So what does that actually mean? So here's a little true story for you that might be of interest to this topic.
I'm interested.
My wife, Brooklyn, when she was on our youth ministry team back when her and I did youth ministry, she had a girl named Becca come up to her one day in the sixth grade. And Becca was like, Brooklyn, will you disciple me? And Brooklyn was like, yeah, sure. Do you know what that means? And she was like, no. But she had just heard that other girls were getting discipled.
Wanted it.
And, right. So my question for you would be, what was your idea of discipleship growing up? Because I know for little Becca, what she thought was discipleship was going out to spend time with an older adult, eating food, possibly talking about Jesus. And that's what discipleship was.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good explanation of what I used to think discipleship was. So I always thought of it as discipleship was the thing you did to make God actually like you. Like, you first got saved and he was just kind of putting up with you, and then you would start doing better stuff and you'd start becoming a better person through this process of discipleship. And it normally included find someone who has walked with Jesus for a while, who's lived with Jesus for a while, and they're going to tell you like the tips and tricks that you can't really figure out on your own. You know, that was kind of the way that I thought about it. So it was finding someone who was good at being a Christian, and then they would tell me how to be good at being a Christian. Mm-hmm. Is that similar to what you thought?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I was discipled by some great guys, Brian Barrett, Evan Wickham, Jason Yetz. I mean, I had like 2 middle school pastors and like 5 high school pastors. So there was a lot of discipleship going around back then. And my thought of it, like when I was going through it, was kind of like, okay, like this guy is going to teach me how to be a Christian. And that's just like, that's what discipleship was. It happened to you. Somebody discipled you. And in the process, you became a better Christian because you were spending time with somebody who was a better Christian. That's kind of the way I thought of it. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of people think of it that way.
Yeah, I think they do. And I think for good reason. You know, I think that, you know, part of what we want to do in this conversation is deconstruct some different things that we normally think about discipleship. But the idea that older, more experienced Christians have things to share with you, that is not something we want to deconstruct. That is just a helpful thing that happens in most church circles. And it's something that we should embrace and encourage, even if it's not the whole scope of what discipleship is.
So yeah, I think that's something we want to get into more, like what actually is discipleship? And so we've talked about kind of the common idea of what it is. My question for you would be, what has changed for you in discipleship? Like, has the paradigm completely blown up and you're like, oh man, when I was a kid, I didn't have it right at all. I was a dummy. Or is it like, well, no, there was some things that were true, but I didn't see the whole picture, you know? Were you missing things? Where are you at now when it comes to discipleship?
So the paradigm hasn't completely blown up, but this deeper foundational element has been added to it. So I still think that it is very important to find people that can teach you more about walking with Jesus because they've had experience walking with Jesus. That said, I used to always think about it as whoever that person was, that's who I was a disciple of. And the biggest
can you say that one more time? Repeat that one more time.
Yeah, I used to think that. So like my former youth pastor, Andy Dean, he was one of the guys that played a huge role in discipling me. And when I started hanging out with him, my thinking was, I am a disciple of Andy.
Yeah.
The big thing that's been shifting for me is we are all, as Christians, disciples of Jesus.
Yep.
And different people just come into our lives for seasons to help us be better disciples of Jesus.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's like a reframing of the goal and a reframing of who we're actually chasing after, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Because that is, I feel like a lot of times how I thought of it, like, oh, I want to become like this person. Like this person has it together. They have it figured out. And so I'm going to spend time with them. And yeah, I came to the same conclusion. It's not about becoming like a person. It's about becoming like Jesus. And so, yeah, when I would disciple students as a youth pastor, I eventually got to a point where I started to tell them, hey, the goal of this discipleship isn't actually for you to become more like me. It's actually for me to become more like Jesus and for you to become more like Jesus. And we do that together. So when we get together, it's not necessarily going to be me saying, hey, let me teach you how to be a good human. Like, I actually, the more time I spend with Jesus, the more I know I'm actually not a good human. And so it's us coming together as brothers and saying like, hey, we are going to, or sisters, and coming together and saying, hey, we are going to walk with Christ together. It's not about trying to be perfect. It's about following the one who is perfect together, I guess.
Yeah. And that's such a helpful shift to make, because it puts way less pressure on the person who's leading the discipleship, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. And it completely changes things from discipleship being that passive thing that happens to you to being an active part of your life going forward.
So in a sermon, I was listening to John Mark Comer, the lead pastor of Bridgetown Church in Portland, and he brought this up, and it just was so good and so helpful for me. Basically, what he says is, he's like, everybody always talks about discipleship like it's a verb, like it's something that someone does to you. Like, oh, I am being discipled by this guy, or, oh, I need him to disciple me, or, oh, I need her to disciple me. But then he says this, he's like, it's not a verb. It was never supposed to be a verb. It's a noun. You are a disciple. And you cannot hinge your identity as a Christ follower on whether or not an older mentor is meeting with you and holding your hand through the process. At some point, you have to own it yourself. You have to say, I am a follower of Jesus, for better or for worse. And that just, like, for me, I was still a youth person, or a youth person. I was still a youth pastor and a youth person when I heard that. And it blew up, it blew my mind, because I was just like, oh man, there's been so many young people I've seen who've been discipled. But then, like, once that older mentor or adult or counselor or volunteer stops meeting with them, a lot of times they fall off the deep end. And it's like, oh man, we should have had someone keep discipling them. But then it made me realize, like, maybe we're doing this the wrong way. Maybe we're teaching them to be dependent on older people, other people holding their hand, instead of teaching them, hey, once all this is over and we're not meeting every week, here's how you maintain this and you keep this going on your own.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense, because I can actually think of moments where I was the person who was doing the discipling, and I would use that phrase with people. I would say, I want to disciple you, or they would come to me and say, I want to be discipled. And at times it would feel like I would prepare and I would show up with things to say, and I would talk at a person for 45 minutes or whatever. And then they wouldn't have much to say beyond that. And then we'd stop meeting up and I'd be like, oh, their life is no different.
Yeah.
And part of why it wasn't different was because I was showing them by example, you come to me, I will do the work in your discipleship, and then you'll just magically be better because of something that I've done for you. And I love this idea that you're bringing up. There's another idea that I know that John Mark Comer talks about, of rather than using this word of finding discipleship, he talks a lot about our apprenticeship to Jesus.
Yeah.
And when I think about someone who's an apprentice, like, I have a buddy who's a carpenter who's going through the different stages of becoming like a super master carpenter. I don't know what the actual names of the different phases you go through are, but one of them
sounds like the name of a Mario game. Super Master Carpenter. Because Mario actually was a carpenter before he was a plumber. Little video game trivia for you.
Wait, was he really?
Yeah.
That's like an actual thing? You're not just making this up right now to see how much I know about Mario?
No. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
I love how New Jersey's New Jersey.
Mario?
Yeah, Mario. Mario.
Mario? What do you call him? Mario?
Mario. Yeah.
Yeah. Mario.
Yeah.
I think that might just be a me thing. I don't know if that's a New Jersey thing.
I think it might be. I just called everyone in New Jersey, though. I called them New Jerseys. Is that like a nickname that could happen? Look at these New Jerseys over here.
We would take it. I saw, this is very unrelated, but it relates to New Jersey. I saw a tweet going around that was saying something to the effect of, like, people who have once lived in New Jersey are the most loyal people to their state. Like, the guy was saying, I could literally bring my girlfriend that lived in New Jersey for 20 something years to Eden itself, and she would tell me she misses the seasons and the pizza's just okay.
Oh my gosh.
And that's so
is that true for you?
Oh, it's so true. It's so deeply true. Like, man. I've I've never read a thing that just like more clearly screamed, I am in this tweet, and he doesn't know it. But like, see, that's right so there. Deeply true.
That's a sermon illustration for how Christians should be about the kingdom of heaven. But anyway,
wow, that hurt.
Hey, just use it. But use
all
it.
All that to say, let's I will. I'll redeem this moment. Back to my supermaster carpenter friend. As I've watched him go through the different stages of when you are becoming a carpenter, one of them is your apprenticeship. And that is a very active thing. He's doing work. He's engaging in schooling. There are different people along the way that are helping to teach him and are helping to like show him the things that he needs to know. But he's really active in that process. And ultimately, nobody is responsible for where he ends up except him. And I think that's something that we need to kind of think through in the idea of I am a disciple, but that means I have to be an active part of this. I have to really put effort and time and thought and work into letting Jesus shape every part of who I am.
Yeah, no, totally. So the thing that it makes me think of is if I was doing the youth ministry thing over again, when I talked about discipleship to my students and to my leaders, to my volunteers, I would frame it as like, you are a disciple, and signing up for discipleship is just an acknowledgement that you want to become a better disciple. But it's moving from that place of, yeah, I'm a Christian because like my parents are Christian. Like I'm a Christian because I go to church. I'm a Christian because I said a prayer once. It's moving from that to this active place of I want to follow Jesus. I want to apprentice under him. I want to become more like him. So if I was sitting down with like, you know, my buddy James, I'd say, James, like you are a disciple of Jesus. And that doesn't change whether or not you and I are meeting. This is just a temporary thing for a season of your life. I'm going to mentor you in this and help you in this. But I would say to him, like, make sure I'm not the last person doing this. Like, make sure that you continue to invite mentors into your life after I'm gone, after you move on and go to college. Continue to follow Jesus and continue to invite other people into your life to help you on that journey. But don't forget that no matter what, you are a disciple, and that does not change regardless of whether or not you're meeting with somebody or not. Your discipleship to Jesus continues as long as you allow it to.
That's really good. So thinking about, we don't want discipleship to end when one particular, let's call it a mentor relationship, just so that we have some different terms. When one mentor relationship ends, that doesn't mean discipleship ends.
Right.
But I know for a lot of people, discipleship feels more real and feels easier when you do have someone in that mentor role.
Yeah.
Why do you think we so badly want someone to be in that mentor position over us?
Yeah.
Like, why don't we all just say, we follow Jesus, that's enough?
Yeah, I can speak into that for sure. I would consider myself to be somebody who over the years has definitely felt like he needed mentorship. I really respond well when I have somebody like in my corner. I think everybody does. Like when you have somebody who's older than you and wiser than you, and they're not like criticizing you all the time, but they're actually trying to help lift you up and prop you up, you know, that can be such a powerful thing. And I think the Bible really lays out, like, I mean, I'm sure you've heard this, but it's that classic idea of like, you know, every Paul needs a Timothy and every Timothy needs a Paul. You know, it's like we all need, like all of us should be mentoring someone, but then also getting mentored by someone else. This podcast is a way of Brian and I, for those of you guys who are younger Christians in the faith, we're actually trying to help mentor you in your discipleship to Jesus through you listening to this podcast. But if all were...
Surprise, you've been discipled the whole time.
Ha ha, surprise discipleship.
Got you. We got you so good.
But if all we're doing is just preaching and teaching and making podcasts, but then no one's pouring into us, there's going to be some difficulties for that for sure. But I think the downside of it is, I'm just going back to like, how I thought of discipleship when I was a kid. I made discipleship all about me. And I think a lot of young people do that. I think a lot of people in student ministry, like they think, you know, I'm going through stuff. I'm going through drama in my life. I'm struggling with these issues and temptations. And it's really like discipleship a lot of times can just feel like free therapy. And it can just feel like, you know, the big brother, big sister program. And sometimes leaders, myself included, we can kind of buy into that. And we just make it all about how do I help this person with whatever problems they're going through, which is a really important part of discipleship. But again, if I could go back and redo it with what I know now, I would have all that stuff incorporated into it. But the central focus would be, I am going to continue to teach you how to be a disciple of Jesus and what your central role and purpose is in the story of God and the story of Jesus, and how that is a core part of your identity. And I think a lot of times, if we are discipling people, maybe some of you guys listening, you're youth leaders and you have young people that look up to you, I would say my encouragement would be, don't miss that aspect of it.
I think more people would benefit from therapy than we often think.
Yeah.
Like, I think sometimes we think that therapy is just the thing you do when you recognize something is broken. And so it's become stigmatized around you only do this when there's deep and unavoidable brokenness, as opposed to you do this as a way to fix broken things. Because let's face it, we've all got broken things, and to make yourself better. So I definitely can see that piece of it. I think there's also a piece of it of so many things about being a Christian are invisible. We serve a God we don't see. We talk about the Holy Spirit living within us, but we don't know what he looks like because we don't see him. And when we think about even, that was always one of the things that was toughest for me in church ministry. So many of the goals you have are not tangible goals. Like, we didn't really work on setting goals of how do we make sure 100 students are showing up to our youth group. We talked about discipleship with the leaders. How do we make sure the students are growing in their discipleship? And there's no metric that you can put on that to be like, well, we know that Jim, we can check the box and Jim is a disciple, but, you know, John over there, he's not a disciple. He's messing it up. Like, you can't like tangibly put that in place. And a lot of times when we do the Christian things, when we read the Bible, when we pray, when we worship, I know for me as a student, I was always asking, did any of that stuff work? Like, I read my Bible today, but did it mean anything? Like, did it do anything? Did I accomplish the goal of reading the Bible? And so having a person in front of us being able to say, here's what you should be looking to do, it's comforting because it begins to provide some structure in our relationship with Jesus. But you are hitting it perfectly. It has to be structure and guidance for your relationship with Jesus, not so that you can be more like the person who's mentoring you.
Yeah, totally. Like, it's all about, in my mind, it's about identity. It's about who are you in this world? And really, that's what everybody is searching for. Everyone is searching for their identity. Everyone wants to know deep down in their bones that they matter and what they do in the world matters. And if the identity we give young kids when we disciple them, there's that verb, right? When we disciple them, when we teach them to be disciples, if the identity is just be a good person, keep all the rules, make sure you don't sin. And if that's the focus, if it's moralistic, if it's getting together with, you know, Johnny or, you know, whatever every week to talk about, like, all right, what are the temptations you struggle with? Oh, you messed up. Oh, that's bad. You got to get better. Again, like, these are not bad components, but if that's the focus of discipleship, instead of, hey, listen, man, like, there is a war between good and evil. There's a war for souls. There's a God who desperately, like, loves the world and wants to reach the world. And he could save the world all on his own, but he chose you and he chose me and wanted us to be his followers. He wanted us to be a part of what he's doing in the rescuing and redeeming of souls, in bringing the kingdom of heaven to earth, you know, all of this stuff. Like, when you start to talk about that, that's like what makes people come alive. And for me, my discipleship to Jesus got so much more exciting when I started listening to pastors who were talking about the stuff I'm talking about now in their sermons. They discipled me indirectly when I would listen to their sermons, and I would actually get excited about Christianity. And it moved me from this place of like moralistic duty to like purpose and vision. When we talk about apprenticeship to Jesus, how do you define that? Like, what does that even mean?
Yeah, the way that I try to look at it is through the lens of what is forming me. So to be an apprentice of Jesus is to let the way that you live, think, and act be formed primarily by your relationship with Jesus instead of by outside factors. So it's all about trying to not just copy behavior, because that doesn't actually change who you are. It's about letting who you are get transformed more and more into the image of Jesus, to be a more pure reflection of Jesus all the way through who we are. Does that make sense, or is that still too broad?
No, that's good. Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, I know for myself, I get really focused on accomplishments, and I get really focused on what I'm doing. And it's easy for me to think, I need to pray more. So I'm going to set a timer and pray for 15 minutes today. And that'll mean that I've prayed more. And it's like, yeah, you can do that. That's cool. Like, I'm not going to tell people to not do that. Like, that's a good thing. But if it's only focused on what you do, then you don't necessarily become the kind of person who prays more. You just did more prayer.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, like I could go out and I could go for a run today. And that would be more running than I've done in the last 4 years. I don't know. I can't think of the last time I went out for a run. Like, I could go do that, but that wouldn't make me the kind of person who runs.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, it's not just about doing Jesus-focused things. It's about becoming a Jesus-focused person. And I think we do that through spending time with Jesus, through spending time with people that love Jesus, and by letting Jesus shape our habits and our attitudes to form who we are before anything else gets to form who we are.
That's really good. There's a component of it I think I want to tap into, because whenever I think about what is a disciple, my brain always goes to the 12 disciples. And I ask myself, what was their experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I think of the 12 disciples, there was a lot of element of imitation, right? Which is what Paul says later on, imitate me as I imitate Christ. The 12 disciples were there. And so they got to imitate Christ, and they got to learn all these different things about Jesus, like how to pray. He teaches them, here's how you pray. He teaches them lessons about the kingdom of God and about forgiveness. And, you know, Peter says, you know, Jesus, how many times should I forgive? 7 times. And Jesus is like, no, more like 7 million, basically. Like, there's all these life lessons that are happening along the way, which is really important. And that's an important aspect of it. As Christ followers and as apprentices to Jesus, when we meet with mentors or when we're studying on our own, we should have this goal, right? To become more like Jesus and to imitate Jesus. But I think there's a component we haven't talked about yet. When I think of the 12 disciples, it was a combination of studying Jesus, imitating Jesus, learning from Jesus, but then also listening to Jesus. There was specific things that Jesus told them to do. Like, you know, for instance, like, hey guys, there's a huge crowd of people here. Go and gather a little bit of food. Get some loaves of bread, get some fishes. That's a direct thing that he's speaking to them in the moment. They have to listen to him and then obey. And I think for us as disciples, we need to learn that aspect of it, to listen in the moment to what Jesus is saying. If it's all just head knowledge, if it's all just imitation, reading the Gospels and trying to live the life that Jesus lived, but we miss out on learning how to listen to what the Holy Spirit is saying and then obeying him in the moment and doing what he calls us to do, I think we're missing out.
Yeah, that's so good, because that's such a huge part of who Jesus was as he lived on earth. He was someone where every day he was completely ready to hear something from the Father and give up everything else and go do it. And if we're going to try to be like Jesus, that is one of the biggest things we can hope to have, you know, get shaped into us, that we would be people where rather than just trying to live up to, you know, career goals or personal goals or family goals or whatever, our first goal would be, I'm ready to hear God and do whatever he tells me.
Mm. When I think about apprenticeship, a lot of times I think in terms, I don't know. Tell me if this is helpful or not, but like Star Wars, I don't know if you're a big fan or not. We've talked about
always helpful. Star Wars is the greatest documentary ever made.
So I think of like the Jedi, right? Like it's this order and they're disciplined and it's basically a religion. The Jedi is a religion, but you have Padawan learners, right? And then you have Jedi Knights and then you have like Jedi Masters. And the Padawans are always learning from the Knights, and then the Knights themselves are learning from the Masters. And that's kind of like the way I've started to view Christianity in a sense is, you know, like for the Jedi, they were always in it. Like once you're a Jedi, you don't stop being a Jedi. Like it's a way of life, you know, like in The Mandalorian where they say this is the way, but that's not Jedi. But yeah, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's a way of life. It's the way of Jesus. And so ideally what it should look like is you have, everyone is accountable to somebody, you know, the kids in the youth ministry are being discipled, they're being apprenticed and they're being taught by, you know, the Jedi Knights, right? The youth pastors and youth leaders, but then those guys are being taught by, you know, the masters above them. And then the ultimate master, of course, is Jesus. And it's like everyone is accountable. Everyone has someone above them and below them, not in some like hierarchy of like who's better, but just who is further along in the journey and who's more mature. And it's like everybody is pulling one another and helping one another. But then, you know, going back to that idea of like once you're stranded on a planet like Yoda, right? You don't stop being a Jedi. Like you're, this might be getting too deep into the illustration, but I'm just saying like, if you end up in a place where you don't have any mentors and no one's pouring into you, your discipleship doesn't stop. Your apprenticeship doesn't stop. Because even if, like, let's say Brian was discipling me. Well, if Brian somehow leaves, I still have Jesus. Like Brian was just helping me walk with Jesus. But I, like, once Brian leaves, Jesus doesn't leave. He's still there. And so there's never an excuse for our discipleship to stop because we always have Jesus to look up to. We always have him to follow.
That is some really deep Star Wars fan fiction I feel like I just experienced. But I do think a lot of the points make a lot of sense. And I think it's not that we have like levels of Christianity that we should be looking to rise through. And I know that that's not what you're saying. That might be pushing the analogy too far. But there is a level of there are people further on this path than me and there are people that are not as far on this path than me. And I am responsible to both of them. I'm responsible to the people that are further along than me because they're carrying the legacy of Christianity forward right now. And I'm going to be them sooner than I think. And I want to be able to carry the legacy along too. And I'm responsible to the people that are behind me that are newer on the path because I know how much I've benefited from the people that are further down. And I want to make sure that they're able to say the same thing when they get to my position. And yeah, I think that kind of staged learning that's all centered on, but even if all these people go away, I still have the thing that matters. That's huge because a lot of times we make discipleship about the person we're with instead of remembering the real goal of discipleship is being with Jesus while becoming like Jesus. And that will never change regardless of what people come into our lives to help us with that or not.
Yeah. Oh, so good. I think it just it's worth repeating that ultimately we are responsible to those above us, we're responsible to those below us, but ultimately we're responsible to Jesus. So our discipleship never should end. And that is something that I have had to learn myself coming out here to Oklahoma, because I worked at a church. I was in an environment where I had tons of mentors and people around all the time, and I was mentoring and they were mentoring me. And then coming out here, I was just on my own. And I was like, for a while, it was easy to slip into complacency. But I realized really quick, like, I have to follow Jesus, like, no matter where I work or what I do. So I ended up going to the church that I attend and looking for the grayest hair guy I could find, you know, the oldest guy on staff, and saying, like, hey, will you mentor me. And I didn't do that because I wanted to lean on someone else as a crutch, but I did that because I realized like my apprenticeship to Jesus should not end at this point. You know, like I need a mentor in my life. And that's something, you know, if any of my former youth ministry students are listening to this, if you don't have somebody in your life right now who's pouring into you directly, please go find somebody. Don't just use a podcast, like find somebody who can help walk with you. And I'm not trying to contradict myself earlier where I was saying, you know, discipleship is not a verb, it's a noun. It's not about who is discipling you. It's about you are a disciple, right? It's a noun, you are one. But what I am trying to say is because you are a disciple, seek out mentors to be accountable to help you on the journey, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. I think we're recognizing that having people to mentor you proves to accelerate your discipleship with Jesus. So if you want to be a better disciple with Jesus, seeking out those mentors is only going to help.
Right.
It's proving the priority that you place on it.
Mm. Absolutely. So now that I've done a commercial for why I think it's important to have a mentor, Brian, let me ask you this. Have there been times in your life where your discipleship to Jesus had to be a little bit more solo? Like you didn't have time to have a mentor, maybe there wasn't any mentors available that could fit into your life. And so what does solo discipleship with Jesus look like? Is it even possible for us to follow Jesus solo?
I think in the long term, it's not the best way to go about it.
Yeah.
When we look at Jesus teaching the disciples how to pray, it's our Father who's in heaven, not my Father who's in heaven.
That's a good point.
So much of our faith, I think, is meant to be corporate and it's meant to be shared. And we're called the body of Christ, not the individuals who hang out with Christ. So all of that kind of ringing in the background, I do think there will be moments where you will kind of be the one at the wheel. And that's not something to be embarrassed about or ashamed of. It shouldn't be your long-term norm, but there are situations where that happens. I know for me, when I moved with my wife to California and now coming back to New Jersey, each of those transitions has required a lot of relationship building. And so it wasn't as easy to just kind of jump in and say, oh, I could totally see myself hanging out with this person all the time. You know, it took some time for those relationships to build up. Right now, we're all still in the COVID season. And so it's really difficult to just go meet up with people and, you know, like you were saying, go get a burrito, brah. You know, like it's harder to go do that when all the burrito shops are closed down.
Dude, such a good Californian accent, bro.
That's what happens when you live there for a year.
Radical.
Nice. So, yeah, some of those transitions make it difficult. The present season we're all in right now might make it difficult, but that doesn't make it impossible. I think it's in those seasons, I focused more on personal study. So I focused more on what are books that I could be reading? What are podcasts I can be listening to? And then even thinking through what are the elements of my relationship with Jesus I want to be better at?
Yeah.
And how do I start making more time for those? Like if I want to be better at prayer, I'll just start pushing myself to pray more and more and I'll start making more time for it. And yeah, I think that you can do some of those things on your own. The place where a mentor comes in is we're not always that good at evaluating ourselves. And so having that outside presence to be able to say, hey, you actually think you're really good at this, but you're not. Or you think these three problems are separate problems, but they're actually one problem. And here's the root thing that connects all of them. You're going to miss out on that if you're doing it on your own. But that doesn't mean you just give up and sit still. You know, you can, I think, really press into study and prayer and Bible reading and see real growth through that.
Totally. Yeah, no, something you said made me think of how many times have you sat down with a student and you're talking to them and they, in their minds, the way they're talking, it's like they think that they have their life all figured out. Mm-hmm. And then for you, you're sitting there looking at them and you're like, okay, buddy, but like, here are all the blind spots you're missing. And you just see the light bulb go on in their head and they're like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. And if they're humble and they're receptive, it becomes this super amazingly helpful thing for them. That's been my experience. My favorite people in the world have been the mentors who were honest with me and willing to tell me when I suck, you know, like willing to tell me where my struggle and blind spots are, because it helps me grow, you know. And when you just have yes men and people just saying, oh, you're great, there's no problems, you don't ever grow. And so then you're just left with your problems and your self-esteem. But the more you have to face your problems with no solution, the more you crumble, you know?
Yeah, it's the whole, the person who tells you your fly is open is your best friend in the room. The people that ignored it were not your real friends.
Right.
It's that kind of principle only put onto spiritual things. Yeah, it's so important to have those outside perspectives. But I think to kind of keep with the spirit of the question, let's say you're in a transition period. Let's say you're in a moment where meeting up with people is really difficult. Let's say you just moved, you know, whatever it is.
Let's say there's a global pandemic.
Yeah, just total hypothetical.
Just throw that out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's say any of those things that clearly would never happen are happening right now. What can you do on your own? You can still invite the Holy Spirit to be that analytical one for you.
Yeah.
I think a lot about David's prayer at the end of Psalm 139, where he prays, search me, O God, and know me. Try my heart. Know my anxieties. See if there's any wicked way in me and lead me in the way everlasting. That is something that every one of us can pray. And when we actually take the time to sit and listen for God to say something, you might be surprised what you learn just through doing that. You know, it doesn't need to be a person standing in front of you giving you that. It's helpful when that happens, but you can also get some of that directly from God if you're willing to sit and wait and listen.
So good. Yeah, so good. And man, the thing that comes to my mind is, I don't know if this is going to make sense, but just like hear me out. Okay.
Let's find out.
All right. We too often mix up what we get and where we get it. A lot of young Christians and a lot of Christians in general, they are trying to get their relationship with God from other people. So they go to discipleship and they go to youth group and they go to church and they think this is what makes me feel connected to God. And then when they go through seasons where that stuff isn't around, then they just don't have a relationship with God. That disappears because they connected it to people. And when the people were gone, then the relationship is gone and they feel alone. And what I would say is, like, you're not alone. Like, you need to get that out of your mind. Like, picture the 12 disciples, Peter, James, and John. If James and John leave and Peter and Jesus are left behind, like, is Peter alone? No, he's with Jesus. He can walk with Jesus. He can talk to Jesus. He can listen to Jesus. He can obey Jesus. He can follow Jesus. Just the two of them. So what I'm trying to say is, don't get your relationship with God from other people. Get it from Jesus. That's what he died for, to build the bridge between you and God. And he is God. So, like, wrap your head around that too. Like, he is God. So get your relationship with God from God, from Jesus. And then put community and other people in their right place. The Christian life was never meant to be lived solo. It just wasn't. But in America, in the West, like, we think it's about our personal relationship with Jesus. We think, like, that's what Christianity revolves around. We think it's about getting saved and then making sure that you have your quiet time and you read your Bible. I heard a killer sermon from Evan Wickham last year or 2 years ago, and he was talking about this, and he was saying in the early days of the church, they didn't even have Bibles. Like, no one had access to the Bible. Like, no one owned scrolls. Like, the priests had those. So, like, back then, like, being a Christian, the way that you did it was you spent time with God one-on-one, you prayed, and then you came together as the body of Christ and you read the scriptures together. You prayed together, you worshiped together, and then you followed him together. And so I think it just, a lot of people miss that. I feel like I'm rambling. Does this make sense?
No, this all makes a ton of sense, which is why I'm letting you do what you think is rambling. Yeah, I think that particularly that idea of we confuse what we get with where we get it from is so, so helpful. And I think that that goes even beyond this topic of discipleship. That goes with church attendance. That goes with service, that goes with ways that you volunteer in your church, that can go into so many different categories that relate to Christian things, I guess, is the only label that I can think to put on it right now. But it's so important to recognize our relationship with Jesus doesn't come because of this stuff. These are just some of the avenues that Jesus uses. And if all of them were taken away, and if you were, you know, go to the classic like youth group setting, like you are a missionary in this other country and you fall into some kind of persecution and they throw you in a jail and they don't give you a Bible, Jesus can still be with you right in that moment. And we all hear that and we're like, yeah, Jesus is better than jail. And we get like super excited about that.
He definitely is.
He definitely is. That's not even debatable.
Let's go on record. Jesus is better than jail.
I feel confident in that one. Yeah, I'm happy we're putting that out there. But like, we'll get behind that story and we'll be like, yeah, Jesus can do that. And then we have a 9-to-5 job, or we have a class schedule and we have a smartphone and we have Netflix access. And then it's like, how come Jesus isn't here? And it's like, no, he totally is. We just drown him out in a lot of these other things. And we need to get back to
guilty.
The simple, it's not about what's the stuff I do for Jesus that make him and I okay. It's about Jesus has made him and I okay. I just want to start spending more time with him.
Yeah, spend more time with him solo, right? Get filled up and then spend time with others and share what he's taught you and let them teach you the things that he's teaching them. Because when you do that, you're being like the 12 disciples. Like, that's what they did. They sat around the fire with Jesus and Jesus poured into them. And then in the rare moments where Jesus wasn't around and he was off doing something, they would talk about what Jesus had taught them. And when Jesus died and then rose and ascended, they spent their lives talking to each other about this is what the master taught us, and then preaching that to other people and helping explain the way, right? This is the way. The way of Jesus. Man, I forgot. I'm getting all amped up because I forgot how excited I get about this topic. When we started this episode, I was kind of sleepy, and now it's all coming together. I'm gonna read this. This is from a book. It's a book by Skye Chathany, who you just learned about recently, remember?
He only just started to exist to me.
Yeah, really good guy. He wrote a book called What If Jesus Was Serious?
Make me like him more. Read the thing.
Okay. So he says, if Jesus was serious, then the narrow way will never be a lonely way. He says, Jesus's call to take the unpopular narrow road should not be misunderstood as a call to isolation or spiritual privacy. In our hyper-individualistic culture, and as public forms of Christianity fall out of favor, it may be assumed that the way of Jesus can only be followed by recluses and monks. This is entirely false. The narrow path is not a lonely path. The call of Jesus is always a call into community. He collected disciples from disparate parts of his culture, fishermen and Pharisees, tax collectors and political dissidents, and formed them into a community. He instructed them not to go into the villages alone, but sent them in pairs. Scripture calls us to love, encourage, and serve one another. It is when we walk the narrow road together, Jesus taught that he would be in our midst. That may be the most comforting reminder of all. We do not take the narrow way because it is easy or because we long to be different. We do not take it merely because of the wide road leading to destruction. We take it because on it we encounter the presence of Jesus. Dietrich Bonhoeffer said it this way: as long as I recognize this road as the one I am commanded to walk and try to walk it in fear of myself, it is truly impossible. But if I see Jesus Christ walking ahead of me step by step, if I look only at him and follow him step by step, then I will be protected on the path. It's pretty good, huh?
So good. Yeah. So helpful to think of it in those terms, because it's very easy to find yourself in a spot and to feel like I must be the only Christian in this building, or I must be the only Christian in this room or at this job or in this school. But to keep remembering, walking the path of discipleship brings us further into the presence of Jesus, which dispels any notions of loneliness more and more as we walk on it. That is so encouraging to hear.
Yeah, totally. And like, honestly, it's one of the reasons that I love doing this podcast with you, because it's not just us making something for other people. Like, I feel spiritually encouraged whenever these conversations are over. Like, I feel like I can take things from this and apply them to my own life. I would encourage any of you guys listening, even if you don't have a podcast, just find a friend where you can talk about Christianity together. Like, it's huge. It's super helpful.
Oh yeah, you'll find that as you have these kinds of conversations, there's a new kind of life that rises up in you. There's a new kind of excitement. You find that in these conversations, you have more to say than you thought you had to say. And as you dive into them, they might feel draining because you're putting a lot of yourself into them, but they're so reviving because they remind you of the things that really matter. And they remind you how much you care about these things. There's no parallel for it.
So Brian, my question for you would be, we're in the same place, but I want to ask you specifically about this. You worked at a church, just like I worked at a church. A lot of times when you work at a church, it can feel very much like you're one of the 12 disciples because, you know, they left everything to follow Jesus and it was just all Jesus every day, 24/7. When you work at a church, that's kind of how it feels. It's just like, oh man, every day I'm going to go help this homeless person and feed them, or, oh, this young person needs to be discipled. I'm going to go pour into them. And oh, you know, it's just all of this ministry happening all the time. Mm-hmm. So for you, now you work at a desk job. You work at a normal job doing stuff that most people wouldn't really define as ministry from traditional standpoints. What does discipleship look like for you now, man? Like, as you're just living your life and going to your job, like what has anything changed? Have you had to think of it differently? How do you think of it now? How do you frame it?
Yeah, I've definitely realized how different what we say in a pulpit on a Sunday morning, and we feel like, yeah, of course everybody gets all of life is for Jesus. And then you go work a desk job and you're like, what I'm writing right now definitely does not feel like it's for Jesus. It definitely just feels like an email, and it feels like it'll only ever be an email. So I'm growing a lot in my sympathy for people that struggled with their pastor saying your whole life is part of your discipleship and it's part of you being a disciple of Jesus. You know, I'm starting to understand some of that cognitive dissonance that happens. Yeah, where it feels like this is just a thing that I do. It doesn't feel like it's for Jesus at all. But because of that, it is helping me remember that even though my job is a thing that I need to do to keep surviving in the world, God is fine with the fact that I have to do that, because being a disciple is not about all the stuff that you accomplish in any given day. Mm. It's much more about character than it is about accomplishment.
That's good.
It was really easy for me working in church circles to say, like, I have 3 people that I'm discipling, or I am going to teach this number of times this week, or to look at accomplishments and be like, because I'm doing these things, I must be good at being a disciple. Whereas now I'm learning to look at things and say, regardless of what I do, if my heart and my character are becoming more like Jesus, that means I'm growing as a disciple.
Yeah, totally.
Is that kind of a similar experience for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's just made me realize something that I told people over and over again. You know, ministry is everywhere. No matter what your job is, you're all called to ministry. It's just made me realize how real that actually is. Because if I have a day where, you know, some days I'm doing ministry stuff, you know, some days I'm recording podcasts and I'm, you know, talking to young people online and doing the mentoring thing, which I love. And then there's other days where I'm just like building a website for a client who is really picky and is just sending me email after email. And then I have other clients who are like, hey, we have 3 meetings today. And at the end of that day, it's so easy for me to be in my flesh and just be like really grumpy. And then like when work is done and my wife wants my attention, I can just be like distant and just kind of grumpy and just like, I just want to watch TV, you know? And it's like that, all of that, I need to continue to be a disciple, like during the meeting and the web design. Like, I need to be doing that web design and thinking, Jesus, like, I'm doing this for you. Like, I want to bring, just like you made Adam and Eve, to bring order into the chaos, you know, of the world in the beginning, you know, when things were void and formless, and you made man to be your tool to go into the world and bring order, right? Like, that's what I'm doing for these clients. I'm bringing order into their world, their chaotic world, through beautiful websites. So it's like, I can honor God through that if my heart is in the right place. I'm making money to provide for my family and for my wife and our future, right? Like, that's godly. Like, that's a good thing. You can't let greed consume you, but you can do that for Jesus. You can say, like, I am earning this, and I'm going to steward my money well, and I'm going to do all of that for Christ. And then, like, when work is over, you need to have your heart in the right place to be the best person you can be for your wife and for your family, you know, for those of you guys who live at home with your parents, for your parents, right? After school, for your siblings. Like, we're all called to be a disciple and follow Jesus. And the discipleship does not end no matter what. So for me, like, what that means for me at my job is taking opportunities through my week. You know, like, for instance, this is just one way it works for me. If I have a week where I know that there's going to be certain days where I'm going to be designing, you know, I don't have to think a lot when I design. It's kind of like second nature. I just sit and do it. Like, I look at something visually and I make it happen. So I'll listen to, like, sermons while I am designing, because I'm like, all right, God, like, this is a moment where I'm working, but I want to honor you with this moment by allowing you to speak to me, right? And it's not like as perfect as sitting at church and taking notes, right? Like, I'm going to miss some things.
Sure.
But there's been so many times, like, during a design sesh where I'm, like, designing a website or graphic or something, and God just, like, speaks to me in that moment. And then there's been times where I'm like, oh man, I got to, like, pause and just, like, go pray for 5 minutes to, like, really absorb that. And to me, like, that's a way to keep the discipleship going, like, to continue to follow Jesus even throughout the workday, to take moments to pause and pray and connect with God, and not just make it about, like, okay, Sundays are my days to connect with God. I'm trying to do that throughout the week and to take advantage of opportunities to connect with the Father and with Jesus, who I'm trying to follow. Because I realize, like, if I'm only connecting with him, like, once a week, my discipleship is very poor, you know? It's not a very close follow. It's a very vague, distant following of Jesus. And I'm not really hearing as much direct word from him throughout the week if I'm not actually listening and leaning into what he's saying.
Yeah, that's so good. So good to think about. If it all comes down to connection, how are we creating more moments of connection? How are we creating more times where that connection is, even if it's not as intense, it's still there and it's still adding up to a deeper relationship because there's just more points of connection there. That's really good.
Thank you.
So as we start bringing this to a close, I want to throw three rapid fire practical questions at you, Aaron.
All right. Sounds good.
They won't literally be fire, but they will be rapid.
All right.
You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. First thought. I want to try and get some practicality out of this. There's tons of great ideas and principles. Now let's think about, how do we actually start doing this? So when it comes to mentorship, how formal does that need to be for it to be effective?
Oh man, I'll try to make this as rapid fire as possible. In different seasons of your life, it'll be more formal, and in different seasons, it'll be more loose. But it's not about the formality or the looseness, it's just about whether or not you're doing it. There have been times in my life where I've sought out somebody and said, hey, I want you to mentor me. I want you to disciple me. I want to meet with you once a month, once a week, two times a month, whatever. And for this many months, it's formal, and we set a goal and we do it. There's other times where, you know, I've joined a church's community group and there's a group of guys and we loosely get together once or twice a month, and it's not very structured or organized, but we still have the intention of, like, we're getting together with Jesus and each other to grow, and it's awesome. And then there's other times where maybe you're a young person in a youth group and you have a small group that meets every week, and that's super, super valuable. Take advantage of that. That's huge. So yeah, I think it can be loose, it can be formal. Just make sure it's happening is what I would say. Would you agree?
I agree. I think the thing to really formalize is when you're meeting. I think try to be as formal as you can with that. You know, if you can do
like
once
consistent.
A week. Yeah. Like if you can really just solidify, we are going to meet once a week. Maybe that's not possible, but if you can do it, push for formality in that sense, in terms of what the time spent together actually is. It all depends on the person, but I've personally found that the more formal it is, the more it just feels like a structure we're walking through rather than a relationship that we're building. So I think try to be really formal about meeting up when you can, because again, you won't always be able to. But then when you're actually meeting up, let life happen and let the Holy Spirit take over as much as possible.
Right. Because the things that we schedule are the things that are actually going to happen in our life.
Mm-hmm.
So the things that you make time for and say like, okay, this is important, this is a priority, those are the things that are going to happen in your week.
Yeah, if you wait for it to happen by accident, it's just never going to happen.
Right. And I do think we need to be willing to tap into like organic discipleship moments, you know, where you get together with a group of people and maybe you weren't planning to have a conversation about Jesus, but then like somebody brings up Jesus and it's this opportunity is like, oh, we didn't plan this, but we're all Christ followers. Let's like lean into this discussion and make it a discipleship moment. But so like, yeah, that'll happen at times and that's great, but don't count on that for your discipleship. Like make sure there's some structured planning in your life when it comes to discipleship, I'd say.
Totally agreed. Next question. What should I be looking for in someone to mentor me?
Millions of billions of dollars so they can buy you burritos.
Just rich dudes in Southern California. Got it.
What was the question again? Sorry. What are the key
things? What should I look for in someone who would mentor me?
Yeah, I think you want to look for maturity. You want to look for somebody who is kind and empathetic and open, someone who's a good listener, but also somebody who's willing to call you out on your crap, you know, like somebody who is willing to say like, I love you so much, I'm not going to let you get away with stuff. You want somebody who's mature, someone who loves Jesus. Like you want somebody who just like, this is how I would describe it. Like when you are around them, they make you want to follow Jesus more. Like that should be the people that are discipling you. And I've been very fortunate to have some people like that who've discipled me in my life. And it's just, it's so exciting. Like you come away from that. And it's like, if you have a legalistic person discipling you, you're going to come away just like depressed. Like, oh man, I can't do it. I can't follow Jesus. I'm not good enough. But if you have somebody who is passionate about God and willing to call you out on your crap, but then like willing to like restore you and point you back to Jesus, like you're going to come away from those like, oh my gosh, like I'm forgiven. I'm redeemed. I have like action steps of how I can grow. And I'm so excited about the potential of like what God can do, you know, and what Jesus can do in my life and what I can do in this world with Jesus working in and through me, you know? So that's what I would say.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think you're looking for someone whose relationship with Jesus inspires you, even if they're a very different person from you.
Yeah.
And someone, like you're saying, who's going to be really honest with you, because so much of what you're gaining in that mentorship is an honest outside perspective. And if you went to someone to try to get better at any skill and all they told you was you're doing great, like you wouldn't actually get any better. So
yep.
I think that you're hitting it right on the head. Last question for you.
I liked your restatement of that because it was way more concise.
I do what I can.
So thank you.
I do what I can. Last question. I know discipling people is important, but I'm scared to start doing it. What should I do about that?
I think you need to remember all the stuff the scripture says about in your weakness, he is strong. And I think you need to remember the Great Commission, which is what Jesus says as he ascended to heaven. He told his followers, go into the world and make disciples. A lot of times we think he said, go into the world and make Christian converts. He did, but he also said, go and make disciples. So Like, it's not just about evangelism. I'm huge on evangelism. Like, yes, we need converts, but there are people who are younger than you in your own church who've been going to church since they were in diapers, and they are not disciples. They're Christians. Like, they're going to heaven, they're saved, but no one has taught them how to follow Jesus yet. Like, people have tried, but it's just gone in one ear, not the other. They need someone to pour into them and mentor them. And God very well could be calling you to do it. Even through this podcast, maybe you've been wrestling with that. You know, like, should I get into ministry? Should I help lead this small group? Should I teach this Sunday school class? Like, if there's an opportunity, pray about it. And if God is putting on your heart, I would say go for it and just trust him. And don't be afraid that you're not going to be a good enough leader, because I know I'm not a good enough leader, but I know that Jesus is a good enough leader himself, and he can work in and through me as I lead others. And I have not been a perfect leader in my life at all. There's been times where I've totally messed up and just been a poor leader and, you know, just not the best I could be. But like, through God's mercy and grace, he's made an impact through my life. And I absolutely know he can make an impact in your life. And I've seen one of the most beautiful things I've seen. I remember there was a summer camp where I had some of my boys up there with me. Some of my, I want to say like junior and senior high school boys. And I had been trying to instill in all of these guys the importance of leadership and just like, you guys need to be leaders, right? And they just weren't getting it. Like, they were afraid of doing it. They were afraid that they weren't going to be good enough leaders. And so they didn't step out. And there was a moment during summer camp where we were going to break up into small groups, and two of our adult guy leaders, they for some reason couldn't make it. They had to be somewhere else at the time. And so it was like, oh, who's going to lead these small groups? And two of those high school guys, junior and seniors, I reached out to them and was like, hey, what about you guys? And they were like, oh yeah, maybe I could. And they stepped up and do it. And like, it was so cool because I saw the light bulb go on in their head where they were like, oh my gosh, like, I'm helping other people connect to Jesus right now. And it's cool because like, that was like 4 or 5 years ago. I'm seeing some of those same guys, and they're currently in leadership in the youth group now that they're adults. And yeah, I'm rambling again. I just get excited about this, but I'm just trying to say, don't be afraid. Don't be scared. You're not going to be the best leader in the world, but neither am I. Neither is Brian. Just be the leader that Jesus is calling you to be, and he will grow you as a leader as you help others grow.
I think if you're waiting to feel ready, what you're actually waiting for is for somebody to hand you a script about what you're going to say and what you're going to do. And the unfortunate thing is that script isn't coming, because discipleship is way more organic, and mentorship is way more about getting to know a person and pointing that person towards Jesus.
Yeah.
So I would say just begin by finding someone that you think you might have something to be able to share with them, and just start listening to them. Just start hanging out with them. Just start spending time. Just start trying to be generous and gracious and loving towards them. And watch how, as time goes on, they might start suddenly feeling a little bit more comfortable asking you some questions that they have about the faith or about their life or about the Bible. And you may not feel like you have the perfect answer, but be a student right alongside them. Because remember, we're all just disciples of Jesus. So you're not trying to say, I am the leader on this path. Instead, what you're trying to say is, we're both walking this path together. Maybe I can point a few things out for you along the way.
That's so good. And like, something that just comes to mind on that as well, to kind of piggyback on what Brian said, don't act like you have it all together, and don't act like you know it all. Like, if you're helping lead somebody and someone asks you a question and you don't know the answer to it, don't fake that you do. Don't pretend that you know the answer and then just, you know, make something up. You're going to lead that person astray. Like, what's so much more attractive in a leader is a leader who goes, oh my gosh, I don't know the answer to that. You know what? I'm going to go and do the work and study and research that. And then I'm going to come back and we're going to talk about it. Like, that's, like, would you agree that's way more refreshing than someone who just like acts like they know it when they don't?
Yeah, that goes way further. And that shows a really good example of a continual learner. I know that when I've had mentors in my life where I've asked them stuff and they're like, that's interesting, I'm going to think about it and read about it, and then I'm going to get back to you. It reminded me, oh yeah, they're not a finished product yet either, but
so
that's
refreshing.
Okay, because that's part of what it means to constantly grow with Jesus.
Well, that was a good conversation about discipleship. Thanks for having it with me, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for joining along with us. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Good Lion Podcast. We hope that this episode was encouraging to you. Hopefully it gave you a couple practical things that you can pray through and start putting into effect soon so that you can continue on your personal path of being a disciple of Jesus.
Yeah, ultimately, for those of you guys listening, like if you haven't caught it yet, the reason we make this show is because we genuinely want to help you walk with Jesus and follow Jesus closer and more strongly. And man, we love that you guys listen, and we love that you make this a part of your week to listen to the stuff that God puts on our heart to say and the stuff that we talk about together. It's a huge blessing. And so, yeah, know that we're praying for you as you are following Jesus and as you are walking with Jesus and as you are continuing your apprenticeship to Jesus. And if you ever want to chat with us about it, you can send us an email at goodlionnetwork@gmail.com or send us a direct message on our Instagram.
If you like our show, please take a moment and review it in iTunes. It seriously helps out so much. The more reviews we get and the more ratings we get, the more people find the show. So if you want to help us out in that way, go to iTunes, leave a quick review, leave a rating. And remember, if you read a review, I will remember that I'm supposed to read your reviews on the show when we get to this part of the recording, and then I'll do it.
Yeah, we haven't had any new ones at the time of this recording. This is recorded on 11/20/2020. No new reviews. Let's get a new one. Don't you want us to reference your crazy username?
I'm ready to go full Ron Burgundy and read whatever you put on the teleprompter.
The Good Lion Podcast is a production of the Good Lion Podcast Network and Calvary Global Network, or CGN. We love making Christ-centered content for all of you guys. If you want to know more about the Good Lion Podcast Network, go to our website. It's a podcast network that me and Brian started with some of our friends, and we've got all types of great resources on there for you. Lots of great shows you can listen to right there on the website, on your computer or your phone. You can stream episodes at the websites. You can find all the episodes of this show at goodlion.io/GLP. That's our new website. So go and check it out. It's simple, but it's got all the episodes and you can listen.
If you like what we do and you want to support us, you can go to goodlion.io/support.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.